Missed an episode of your favorite podcast? Choose from over a decade of content in our archives. Not just the latest episode. All free at GCNlive.com.
We are 15 years into this new century. 15 years that dawned with terror touching our shores, that unfolded with a new generation fighting two long and costly wars, that saw a vicious recession spread across our nation and the world. It has been and still is a hard time for many. But tonight, we turn the page. Tonight, after a breakthrough year for America, our economy is growing and creating jobs at the fastest pace since 1999. Our unemployment rate is now lower than it was before the financial crisis. More of our kids are graduating than ever before. More of our people are insured than ever before.
All right, the president and the State of the Union address. Hey, everybody. Kate Delaney, America Tonight. We'll have lots of reaction on the State of the Union, including from you, as many immediately jumped on the email and the internet and sent me emails, so the mailbag is full. In fact, we're going to hit the mailbag in our next segment. Plus, we'll talk to Luke Vargas on the foreign policy points of view, the things that Obama talked about in his speech. You heard what he mentioned there at the top, and also a conversation with a Sergeant Stephanie Shannon, who talks about what she's doing to help veterans who have come back and have PTSD and all kinds of other things, and how rough it was for her when she came back from her service. In our second hour, Jim DeFelice, the author of American Sniper, will join us. Can't wait for that, to talk about Chris Kyle and his service. And we'll also chat with Horace Cooper, who has his own thoughts about what the president had to say in the State of the Union and where he really missed. Most of it, as Horace will say, it was about raising money, raising taxes, and this whole idea of the middle class and regulation. And certainly that's one thing that most Americans don't want to hear, especially in an entrepreneurial society. So there were some highlights. There were some areas, I think, where Americans could agree, and there were some misses. Luke Vargas, who couldn't be more liberal, didn't agree with a lot of what the president left out and left on the table for the taking by not specifically addressing a couple of main areas, especially when it comes to cybersecurity, for example, and Horace Cooper talked about that as well. First, you know, we have all the regulation and, of course, what happened with the NSA. We go through that process. And now something completely different is being pitched out. But what does it all mean? What does that mean for you and me? And how are we going to be kept safer from cybersecurity when you think of all the identity ripoff, credit card ripoff? I've been a victim of that. Many of you have been a victim of that. Of course, we saw what happened with Sony. We saw what happened with CENTCOM. We've exposed soldiers and social security numbers and all kinds of things. So I think, yes, it has dawned on us that cybersecurity is incredibly important, but also at the same time, what is it that we're willing to give up? What is it that we're going to do to make a very big change? And what would you say, or what would you give, what kind of grade would you give the State of the Union? Would you give it high marks? Would you give it low marks, or somewhere in between? I mean, there wasn't, you know, there was some vague promises, but not so much on promises. And I think, as you heard there, it was more about, okay, here's what we've accomplished, and this is a little bit of where we're headed. But even though discussions over unemployment continue, we still have people who are underemployed, and we still have people that are having problems making ends meet. And a lot of this, again, goes back to entrepreneurs. So the tax plan was definitely pushed. That was one of the main themes in the State of the Union. And a couple of other things throughout the entire hour plus, because it was a pretty long, actually, State of the Union, if you want to look at it from, you know, that point of view. And we'll get into more of the meat of it as we move along here. Joni Ernst, the senator from Iowa, had the, if you call it the Republican response, she had the Republican response. And what was great about Joni Ernst is she said, I'm not going to talk about the State of the Union. I'm going to talk about what Republicans are thinking needs to happen. And she went into all of that. And I thought that was great. So it wasn't like, well, he said that and Obama promised this and this hasn't happened and we think this isn't the right priority and all that kind of stuff. It was more, this is what, how we view what has to happen in the future. We heard you in November, and bravo to her for not just completely bagging on the prez, and instead just focusing on, here's what the Republicans have come up with. And I think that was intentional. When they met in Hershey, I guarantee that's one of the things that they talked about, that there's no reason to go ugly. No reason, even if though it's popular, to go and take the points and squash them, why not say, here's what we see. Here's what we think. Because they knew ultimately what the themes were going to be anyway. They knew that. They knew what the broad parts were of the State of the Union. Cybersecurity certainly was going to be one of them. Efforts against ISIL was going to be another one. And what we were doing as far as blowback to ISIL and stopping them. So none of that was, you know, none of that was a surprise. So they certainly could form their own response as to where they see them, where they see the country really needs to move. And I thought that was pretty interesting. You can always weigh in on America Tonight. Join us in our next hour, especially at the top, with your thoughts and opinions on the State of the Union at 855-266-5283. 855-266-5283. And we'll talk A to Z about some of the reaction and what the president gets out of this State of the Union. And in some ways, I thought it would be more hard-hitting, but maybe that was the idea. Hey, I'm already in the place. I don't have to say anything about it. And there was nothing said about Yemen, which is the hornet's nest, when you talk about terrorism, which was really surprising to me. And I think this is one of the things that Luke Vargas will talk about. And, of course, while all this conversation is happening, rebels seize the Yemen palace, and there's been nothing but training and some horrible things that have come out of that area. We've had our terrorism expert, Jeff Atticott, talk about Yemen for a very long time and how to be incredibly concerned. And he said this for years as to where things have shifted. Plus, no mention whatsoever of Al-Qaeda. Buckle up. Three great segments coming up, including your thoughts from the mailbag. Also, Luke Vargas. And we're going to introduce you to Sergeant Stephanie Shannon. Coming up on America Tonight. Have you ever heard of a pharmacist who discourages the use of most prescription drugs? Well, pharmacist Ben Fuchs is that person, and boy, is he fascinating. He's a nutritional pharmacist and skincare specialist who operates out of Boulder, Colorado. And to hear this man speak is nothing less than inspiring, because he's charismatic and makes a lot of sense. He asks, why take dangerous drugs when all your body needs to stay healthy is all natural with no side effects? Pharmacist Ben sees the human body as a healing and regenerating system, divinely designed to heal and renew itself on a moment-to-moment basis. cases, but it needs nutrition and nutritional supplementation. Ben says you've got to be on a nutritional supplement program if you want to be healthy in 21st century America, and he wants to help people get off the toxic drug treadmill and get on a good nutritional supplement program. I support what pharmacist Ben is saying and doing to help America get healthier, and I urge you to watch and listen to Ben deliver his powerful message at your convenience. Just go to AmericaTonightTeam.com. That's AmericaTonightTeam.com.
Gold is like nothing else on Earth. From the Romans through the Renaissance, from the Industrial Age to the Space Age, gold has weathered the test of time. For 6,000 years, gold has remained the ultimate store of wealth. According to the World Gold Council and the U.S. Mint, demand is at an all-time high. The stage is being set for the reemergence of gold as the common-sense alternative to a fiat paper currency that gets weaker every day. Midas Resources is proud to offer the hard-hitting report that arms you with the truth you need to protect you and your family from the Fed's plans for your hard-earned money. Don't gamble with your future. Call Midas Resources today and ask for your free copy of As Good as Gold. Call 1-800-686-2237 for the report the Fed hopes you'll never see. As Good as Gold can be yours by calling 800-686-2237. If you have ever thought about owning gold, you must read this report. Call Midas today at 800-686-2237.
Yeah?
Did you want to see me, sir?
Well, I did, but now that I do, I'm not so sure.
Sir?
Johnson, I got a mission for you that could change your life.
Oh, good, sir.
It involves traveling halfway around the world without so much as half a clue of where you're going or what you're going to do when you get there.
Situation normal, sir?
Uh-huh. Well, I'll be leading this mission, Johnson, so I'll be telling you what to do.
You, sir?
That's right, Johnson, and I say first things first.
Oh, good plan, sir.
And what I say is first is food. Always remember that, Johnson. Food is a big deal.
Sir, my brother-in-law can give us a really good deal on some surplus MREs.
Johnson, if you've got half a brain and that empty head of yours, you'll call the freeze-dry guy like I did. That food is better for you, it rehydrates faster, and it's good, Johnson. And it keeps for up to 30 years.
Will we be gone that long, sir?
I hope not.
Now get your supplies organized and meet me down at the pier at dawn on Sunday. We sail at sunrise.
Yes, sir.
This adventure is brought to you by the freeze-dry guy. Call 866-404-3663 or visit freezedryguy.com.
Having lots to say about the president's speech, upcoming speech, because some of the snippets of it were released to the public. Of course, I had a transcript prior to the president actually hitting the marks, and that's because unprecedentedly, they sent out everything with the State of the Union to journalists. So how about that? I've gotten little snippets before, but never this. And certainly some of you are aware of the snippets. And let me just tell you about a couple of them, because these hit you hard. One was Iraq and Syria. One was the lack of specifics on cybersecurity. Another was about taxation, for sure. So on that note, let's turn to the America Tonight mailbag.
You have mail, mistress.
This one is from Sean, and Sean says, Kate, you know, I don't really hate Obama. I don't get when people call your show, no offense, Dan in Texas, hard right turn. Izzy, who I think is smart, hard right turn. I don't get when people just trash Obama. It's like we're in a playground, and they're throwing rocks at him, and that's just lame. And they're smarter than that, both of them. But I understand how furious they are with the things that this president has done. And it seemed to me, in most of his State of the Union address, when he really has the chance to go for the jugular, because, hey, he's not running again, right? He did anything but. I mean, he didn't really say too many specifics. He talked about cyber security and said, we're always going to make sure we do what we do. And this seems like this is a change of heart from what we've heard from Washington before, especially the administration, because of leaks, like the NSA leak. So I don't understand. Because Sony is hacked, because CENTCOM is hacked, because people are getting embarrassed in the government, and a lot of people are getting hacked now all of a sudden. Yeah, we're worried about cybersecurity. It seemed like they were backing off some of this. If I worked at the NSA, if I headed the NSA, I'd be very confused. And my first phone call would be to the president to say, we need to have a meeting. Let's go over some of the specifics that you're looking for and hoping will change in these next 2 years, because really our hands are tied with some of the legislation that's been discussed and with some of the things that have already been rolled back at the NSA. Yeah, change when it's convenient, I guess. I thought that was very surprising, too. I mean, let me pull a quote from that. One of the things that the press said is, and tonight I urge this Congress to finally pass the legislation we need to better meet the evolving threat of cyber attacks, combat identity theft, protect our children's information, really? And if we don't act, we'll leave our nation and our economy vulnerable. Really? If we do, we can continue to protect the technologies that have unleashed untold opportunities for people around the globe. Okay, so what does that mean? What are you suggesting that has to be done to secure all those very difficult things to secure when you're not monitoring people, when you're not monitoring certain information? And it's very tough to crack some of these incredible hackers. It's really hard to track them down. So not a piece of cake to do that in the first place. All right, here's another one. This one from James in Illinois. And James says, Kate, I have to say, I am a fan of the president's. I am. I'm a Democrat. I listen to your show, and I like the way you try to balance things out. But I think it's hard for Democrats to call in because some of the people that come on your show, frankly, not the guests, but some of the people that call into the show have no idea how to compromise. I would love to see what their personal lives are like. And therein lies the problem in Washington. And this is Democrats and Republicans, let's face it. So the president talks about booming energy. He talks about controlling our future more than any other nation on earth. We have to choose who we want to be over the next 15 years and for decades to come. Where do we commit ourselves? To an economy that generates rising incomes and chances for everyone who makes the effort? Well, of course, people that make the effort think that they shouldn't have salaries that are stagnant. And what is he going to do? Demand that corporations find these people and pay more? So there were a lot of these bold kind of statements that, sure, that's what other politicians would do. I mean, it's not just Obama. Other politicians in the same spot would say the same thing. But because he's already won, he's already in office, he's fading out, this is his legacy, I figured this is the time where you can get tough and not give, pardon the pun, a crap about what anyone thinks and just say, here's what I think we need to do. I know some people won't like it. Here's how I think we should do it. Hey, it might not get voted on. Why don't we ever have that kind of straight, tough, normal talk? Oh, my friend, you have not spent enough time in D.C. That's not the way politicians speak. And let me tell you, the minions around them, the layers of people and the speechwriters and, you know, the chiefs of staff, not just for a president, but for a congressperson or a senator, they are petrified of them falling into a hole and making a big mistake and saying something that's going to cost them in the end. Especially if they're running again. Now, in Obama's case, he's not, and I understand your point of that. Why not just kind of forget the sugarcoat and all that kind of stuff? But, you know, there was definitely some kind of what I would call soft moments. Nothing really terribly hard. There were moments of applause. There were things that were, you could tell, were agreed upon. Obviously, cybersecurity, everybody wants to see that. I mean, what Republican or Democrat's going to say? No, we don't want to have cybersecurity. Of course, they're going to say that. All right, this one's from Jimbo. And Jimbo says, Katie, Kate, I listen to the show all the time. I promise I'll call. I have written you before, and I have said that I will call. I just have had a crazy work schedule. Now that Shrimpin came back to life in the Gulf, I'm coming out of that, and and I am exhausted, dog tired. So I try to re-rack your show and listen during the day. I did want to hurry and get this to you because I saw a little bit of the State of the Union address. And I remember you were talking about the whole thing about middle class economics. And I heard the president mention the middle class economics. But to me, it didn't seem to really spell out very much, just to say that the country does well when, hey, everybody gets their fair shot. I've been on all ends of that stick, and usually you got to know someone to get your fair shot anymore these days, depending on what industry you're in. Don't you agree? Yeah, it does depend on what industry you're in. It depends on who you know. I mean, the whole idea of networking now and entrepreneurial ideas couldn't be bigger, and for a reason, because you're looking to the people around you to help support you, and small business is the way to go. That's why overregulation of small business, I am so against that. Let the people who have small business ideas move them forward, not to the detriment of drowning in hundreds and thousands of dollars of debt and bad loans, but there are people that can certainly make strides if some of those loans were loosened up. But certainly some of the regulation, the overregulation, and I get it, you have to have some, but we don't have some. We got some. A lot, in other words. All right, this one from Michael. Boy, everybody just jumped. How did you jump on the computer so fast? I don't understand that. All right, this one from Michael. And Michael says, Kate, I heard you talking about the Patriots the other night. And you know what? I don't like the Patriots. I know you probably have people that listen to your show that love the Patriots. I don't know. I don't say I hate them, but I just think they're so arrogant. I like fresh new teams. It would have been pretty cool. I'm not a Colts fan, but to see the Colts get there. And poor Andrew Luck, he just looked terrible in that game. You mentioned it a couple of times when you were talking about nail the score. And the whole idea about the deflated football, how darn ridiculous is that deflated football? Won't it be wild if during the Super Bowl coverage that's all they talk about and they come up with deflated footballs and they can prove that they were deflated? Yeah, I don't think they're going to come up with that. I don't think they're going to come up with deflated footballs. But the storyline was cockamamie, wasn't it? Crazy. Yeah, so that the Patriots would actually say, hey, look at the weather, this is perfect for us, and let's get in here and let's deflate these footballs. I mean, I think they felt, I mean, here's the thing you got to remember. I think they felt pretty confident, especially the way they had played the Colts before. I think they felt pretty confident that they were going to beat the Colts. And I don't think they were looking for any trickery on deflating footballs. I mean, I know about things in the past, but that just doesn't make any sense. It would be stupid. There would be no reason. There would be no reason to take that risk, but it is a very, I have to say, it is a very funny storyline. And if I were one of the board reporters covering these two teams with not sexy, exciting, I don't know, headlines, because you have ridiculous amounts of media, I forget how many it is. I've been in the middle of it 10 different times in my life, and it's nuts. You come up with not the same old thing, and I guess this is one of the storylines, so there you go. Hey, if you ever want to email the show, do it, americatonight.net.
What good is a Big Berkey water filter?
We get that question a lot here at BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. And in a word, the answer is protection. Protection from water main breaks, E. coli contamination, environmental chemical spills, pesticide runoff, chlorine taste and smell, and all forms of fluoride. Plus, Big Berkey water filters are the original gravity water filter system and most trusted on the market for a reason. Tested by multiple independent NSF EPA certified labs, they are the gold standard in water purification. At only 1.7 cents a gallon, a single set of filters can last for 5 to 10 years. That means big savings. Big Berkey, the one that's powerful enough to purify stagnant pond water. Get a Big Berkey today at BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. GCN listeners receive 5% off all ceramic filter systems. Visit our website or call 1-877-99-BERKEY. That's 877-99-BERKEY. Big Berkey Water Filters, for the love of clean water.
UnseenNow.com, proud sponsor of GCN. Unseen Now's unparalleled encryption tools keep your communications secure. GCN.
Don't complain about your cable bill going up and up and up. Do something about it. Grab a pencil and jot down this special number. 1-855-905-MY-TV. The more cable TV rates go up, the better digital satellite TV looks. Say goodbye to the cable guy and get more of your favorite channels in 100% digital quality for less money. Call 1-855-905-MY-TV. Sign up for packages starting as low as $19.99, and there's no equipment to buy. You get free HD TV upgrade, a free DVR upgrade, and free professional installation. You control what you watch, when you watch it. Record your favorite shows. Pause and rewind live TV. Even skip the commercials. Watch local channels too. At just $19.99, what are you waiting for? Pull out your major credit or debit card. Call 1-855-905-MYTV. 1-855-905-MYTV. Say goodbye to the cable guy. Cut costs and get more. 1-855-905-MYTV. 1-855-905-MYTV.
This alert just came in. This special announcement is for business owners and leaders of organizations who've been waiting for the right time to build. General Steel has made it impossible to wait any longer with rock-bottom prices that could save you thousands. That's right, General Steel, America's leader in pre-engineered structures, is offering buildings at prices you will never see again. Don't miss these prices. A 50 by 100 for $35,000. You heard right. That's 5,000 square feet for $35,000. Manufacturers, if you need a larger building, try a 100 by 100 commercial building for $129,000. You can't afford to rent with these prices. Imagine a 70 by 100 foot church building for under $69,000. With the economy improving and interest rates still at historic lows, you can't afford to wait. So call 866-91-STEEL. Lock in your price now. Call 866-91-STEEL. That's 866-917-8335.
Are you always 5 minutes late? Maybe you're only late when you don't want to be somewhere. Then you realize you're always 5 minutes late. For work, you set 3 alarms, drag your feet in the shower, drink your coffee slowly until you're rushing out the door. 5 minutes late. It's not that you hate your job. Hate is such a strong word. You're just not that excited about it. But most people don't love what they do, right? Listen, if you're local to the Twin Cities, are hardworking, self-driven, with experience in sales, marketing, or advertising, are personable, and a whiz on the phone, you might want to join one of the largest independent talk radio networks in the world, GCN. Because right now, we are hiring, and we offer benefits. Experience preferred, but we'll train the right person. Is that you? Submit your resume today to advertise at gcnlive.com. That's advertise at gcnlive.com. Come work with the Genesis Communications Network, where you'll want to be 5 minutes early every day.
Catch up with Luke Vargas from the UN in New York City so we can look at the President's State of the Union perspective from the foreign policy point of view, because that's a lot of what Luke Vargas covers. As you know, he's joined us in some wild places in the world these past couple of years, and he's covered some major, major big stories for sure. Luke, thanks for coming on as always.
You bet. I always love talking to you.
Okay, so we know that always Iran is floating around, and there's lots of opinions on Iran, and are there going to be solid negotiations, and what about nuclear aspirations, and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, when you look at Iran, is this something you just, this is something the president kind of stays away from in a State of the Union?
You know, in full disclosure, and I'm not sure when your listener is going to be hearing my words, the president's speech has not begun. It's only 9 o'clock here. I guess it's getting underway momentarily. But what's actually happened this year is that instead of just journalists being given a copy of the president's speech ahead of time, and I have to admit, you know, as a young journalist, it was sort of one of the perks of the job that you often get a little, you know, PDF of a speech an hour before it occurs, and you feel like hot stuff walking around before anyone else knows what the punchline is. This year, the White House has released the remarks of the president to the public before this speech, so I haven't heard these words delivered, but I have all of them in front of me, and I just got them a few seconds ago. So, you know, the answer is that Iran is very much a part of this speech.
Wow.
And I could have guessed this, because over the past few weeks, the president seems to have landed on language he's very comfortable with when it comes to talking about the status of these Iranian nuclear negotiations. And his portrait is that it's there are reasons to be optimistic, but more than anything, it's a very fragile, monument of negotiations that we've created, if you will, that there's, you know, had been so much mutual distrust that to even be in this place where we are, where we've done, I guess it's now two or three major, postponements and continuations of these resolutions, we don't want to screw anything up. When the president was joined by David Cameron last week in Washington, the two of them, it was sort of an echo chamber. They got along so well, but they really agreed on this one point. And Cameron kept coming to the plate to go to bat for the president and saying, look, Congress, I can't tell you what to do. This is David Cameron saying as Congress. I can't tell you what to do, but boy, passing new sanctions on Iran would be very harmful for what, you know, both the president and I have built over the last few years. And again, looking at these remarks in the speech, he's continuing with that language. He says again that he would veto any legislation that would sort of put additional sanctions in the back pocket of Congress. He says, let's give this a shot. Our outcome isn't certain, but we know what the certain outcome would be if we pass new sanctions, and that's that Iran would walk away from the table. So, this is something he was very comfortable walking up to the podium and saying today.
Yeah, I got an advanced copy of that, too. And one of the things that he also said, and I'm not surprised, he talked about Iraq and Syria and American leadership and saying the military power is stopping ISIL advancing, and we're not getting dragged into another ground war in the Middle East. And I guarantee there's going to be people who have some comeback on this, because he says, I call on Congress to show the world that we're united in this mission by passing a resolution to authorize the use of force against ISIL. Not a surprise, I don't think.
No, one of the more interesting things about, you know, combing through these speeches is to see which hot topics of the day, if you will, slip in. You know, what are those one or two lines that the staff were furiously crossing out this morning and rewriting? And you'd have to say that Yemen would have been a topic that a country would perhaps have expected to see here. There's not a lot of mention of Al-Qaeda. If I'm mistaken, there is no mention of Al-Qaeda.
No.
And that's a dynamic to this whole terrorism thing that I'm a little, I was hoping for more clarity there from the president, expecting that this would be a good opportunity to sort of reset what the real goals are here. And at least in my estimation, the biggest thing that Charlie Hebdo, the attacks there, has sort of made me and others here at the UN, you know, very conscious of is the fact that this fight against terrorism certainly isn't complete if you're only talking about it in terms of the Islamic State. And it puts the president in sort of an awkward position, because he has decided to be at the head of the tip of the spear, fighting terrorism against the Islamic State, rallying together on paper 60 countries, but then to realize in a moment that there is a whole nother front to this war that, you know, I guess the U.S. is quite involved in Yemen when it comes to drones and the like, but we have sort of been ignoring, at least rhetorically, the risk posed by Al-Qaeda. We did not see, if the president, barring any last-minute changes in his delivery, of an acknowledgement or a justification for what the plan now is to capture the full terrorist risk. again, I'm a little surprised we kept the focus on the Islamic State, not mentioning Yemen, Al-Qaeda, those really responsible for Paris.
Yeah, and, you know, it's interesting. Of course, we know that Cuba was going to be heavily featured because you had people in the audience with ties to Cuba, etc. And we knew this was going to be something heavily mentioned. But this is a sticking point between a lot of members of Congress because of the embargo debate and whether or not that would even be lifted.
Yeah, I was a little surprised in this paragraph on Cuba, you know, when it comes to democracy and pro-democracy efforts there. All he says is that he hopes this ship will stand up for democratic values. Mm. Really, as watered down as you could phrase it as far as setting a new set of goalposts here. You know, this agreement that I guess the first few goals have been already reached that have been hashed out over the last few months between Havana and Washington included a list, evidently, of 53 names that Washington said they needed to see these pro-democracy activists released from prison in Cuba, and that would be a confidence-building measure. And now we have later this week the Assistant Secretary of State going down to Cuba, I'm guessing to do a little scorecard to say, look, this is our first stab. It's been a month since we did this reset. How did both of our sides do? Are we happy with what we've accomplished? It looks like Cuba, on paper, has lived up to their, you know, pro-democracy portion of our first diplomatic engagement with them. I'm a little surprised. I wouldn't, you know, I can't say disappointed, but I'm a little surprised that the president didn't set clearer goals for what he's next going to need to see from Cuba in order to keep us moving along this path of warming up relations. To just say that this deal in its early phases stands up for democratic values, I'm not sure we have enough evidence of that. You know, Cuba has released dissidents, but they've also said, look, if you are released from prison and then you start speaking out again, you're going to go right back into jail. That is in no way a sign that Cuba has really changed its stance on a lot of things. So maybe this is going to be left to the back rooms in a few days, but I'm surprised the president didn't use this platform to demand a little bit more or sort of say what he wanted to see as far as reforms go in Cuba.
Yeah, I agree. I think he played it safe there. And then there's this piece, no foreign nation, no hacker should be able to shut down our networks. And I'm reading from his speech, steal our trade secrets, and of course he could change that, or invade the privacy of American families, especially our kids. We're making sure our government integrates intelligence to combat cyber threats, just as we have done to combat terrorism. Wow, so what does that mean? What is he pushing Congress to do? More legislation?
Gosh, what a tonal shift from last year when the president was figuring out how to deal with the public outrage about the Snowden leaks. I mean, he's certainly not afraid to essentially suggest enhanced internet monitoring as a way of deterring hackers. It sort of represents perhaps a view by the White House that there's been sort of American collective amnesia about our concerns about the you know, sort of Big Brother,
yeah.
To say that we need to now do similar tactics that we use to fight terrorism online, which have been a lot of surveillance programs, that we now need to almost expand that to another realm of monitoring, I think shows that, you know, the landscape has changed quite a lot in the last year. But again, that's right at the top of the foreign policy section, really, that the president very keen to play off of recent news events as far as cyber threats go.
Yeah, and lastly, because you're heavily involved in this, you've been to a bunch of these different summits, climate change. What about climate change?
Yeah, I mean, here's one where, you know, sort of the stakes are pretty clear for me. The president has two more of these speeches to go, and, you know, this one is one of them. And by the time he speaks again next year, hopefully, this United Nations climate treaty will have been inked and be going into effect. So it's not surprising then that the president spent a few big, long paragraphs, some of his best rhetoric on climate change. He said, you know, he's determined to make sure America basically follows up the action we've been doing domestically with leading the negotiations. And that's something important. You know, we've seen the U.S. and China announce those joint emissions pledges a few months back. You know, but sitting at the U.N. and thinking, gosh, you know, there are only something like 20 negotiating days. And again, not all negotiations happen on set negotiating days, but there is not really all that much time for these countries to sort of get themselves in the same room, start hashing out text for this climate deal. And we hadn't seen, even to this late date, many countries volunteering to lead negotiations. They would make the strong or weak commitments on the national level, but then they'd sort of leave it. They wouldn't say what role they were going to play in the run-up to these Paris talks in December. For the president to come out tonight to seem to say that the U.S. is willing to exert some diplomatic pressure to do some of the heavy lifting, and it's definitely going to be pretty contentious if it comes down to the wire. You know, it's sort of a legacy item, you can tell. It's a part of the president's agenda for his final 2 years in office that it looks like he's now very serious about investing in. And you know, I'm very excited about that. We needed to see someone step up, and hopefully this is the U.S.'s moment to do that.
Luke Vargas, TRN, from the UN. Thanks, as always. We'll talk to you again.
You bet. Take care.
American gardeners and fellow patriots, make the right choice with your money, time, and your family food supply. Choose 100% pure heirloom seeds in the Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com. Why spend more? The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com is only $37.95 and includes 20 varieties of pure, hardy, easy-to-grow heirloom seeds. Yes, only $37.95. That's 70% less than our competitors. You could buy 3 Survival Seed Vaults for less than one of theirs. The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com includes detailed planting and seed saving instructions and ships same day. Plus, all orders over $49 ship free. MyPatriotSupply.com is American owned by patriots like you, passionate about freedom and preparedness. Call now, 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. Or discover more emergency preparedness items when you order at MyPatriotSupply.com. Choose the original. Choose the Survival Seed Vault at MyPatriotSupply.com.
Virtually anyone can hack your cell phone and track your calls, your texts, your emails, your every movement, but only if they can detect a signal. Stay one step ahead of hackers and Big Brother with a Blockit Pocket, a custom-made pocket infused with pure silver that creates a complete Faraday enclosure for your cell phone. For free shipping to the Lower 48, visit BlockitPocket.com or call 888-315-9618. BlockitPocket.com, enhancing health and privacy.
This is Dan Pilla. Do you owe the IRS money you can't pay? Are tax debts crippling you? I've defended people from the IRS for over 30 years. I've helped thousands, and I can help you too. I wrote the book on IRS settlement, and I'm telling you, there's no such thing as a hopeless case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX to finally get free of IRS debt. With the IRS's new programs, there's never been a better time to solve your problem. Call 800-34-NO-TAX. That's 800-34-NO-TAX or my website, danpilla.com.
Alex Jones here. For the last 2 years, I've been working with top doctors, nutritionists, and chemists to design a nutraceutical formulation that has truly life-changing health benefits. So many other formulations out there contain toxic ingredients, synthetic additives, and even GMOs. Introducing the all-new Ancient Defense Herbal Immunity Blend, crafted with over 14 key ancient herbs and extracts to supercharge and prepare your body for what experts admit is the most dangerous season of the year. We have rejected hundreds of other formulations in our quest to bring you what is simply the most powerful and comprehensive proprietary formula that we have ever created in the realm of herbal immunity. Experience the benefits of combining over 14 ancient herbs and extracts with exciting new advances in nutraceutical science. Now is the time to secure Ancient Defense for you and your family. Visit InfoWarsLife.com or call 1-888-253-3139. That's InfoWarsLife.com.
Oh, darling, please believe me. I'll never do you no harm. Believe me when I tell you, I'll never do you no harm.
Night on America Tonight. You know, we have Jim DeFelice on the show. He was one of the writers of American Sniper, and he talked all about Chris Kyle and the, you know, what kind of guy he was and the things that they talked about and, you know, the whole sniper thing and coming back and how tough that was for him to open up and how they really wanted to portray that in the book. And DeFelice said he had to really twist the editor's arm to get them to allow, one, the wife to talk about it and to Chris to talk about it. And it ended up being such a great nugget and such a good thing for, I think, other military families to see. Well, now we have Sergeant Stephanie Shannon, who is a number one international best-selling author of the book Battling the Storm Within. She's got a whole bunch of titles, meaning that she's really good at what she does, right? She's been an entrepreneur, an inspirational speaker. I know about that. And here's the cool thing. A veteran advocate who has 27 years of experience in all kinds of fields. And, of course, you heard me say sergeant. So she was honorably discharged, a disabled U.S. Army vet who served her country for 8 years, including the 1991 Desert Storm, Desert Shield, Persian Gulf War I. Sergeant, thanks so much for coming on. We appreciate it.
I appreciate that being here. It's a great opportunity.
So you heard what I said about Chris Kyle. How do you feel about Chris Kyle's story? Because, you know, he has struggled when he came back with some of the things that you're trying to help people with and what you went through, undiagnosed post-traumatic stress disorder caused by, he didn't go through this, it was caused by military sexual trauma, but also Gulf War illness and some other things. How do you feel about Chris Kyle and his story before we dive into yours?
Well, to be honest, I don't know the specifics of his story. So to speak in details will be not as effective, but I am gathering that it's stemming from the post-traumatic stress disorder, lack of adjustment back into civilian culture.
Yeah, and it was tough with his family. He had two young children, and he couldn't focus. And, you know, what he really got upset about is that people didn't seem to care we were at war. They didn't act like we were at war, and he didn't understand that when he came back to San Diego. It was like, wow. I've had my friends killed. I've had to kill so many people trying to protect Marines. I don't understand why nobody is talking about this. Did you feel the same way or no?
Yeah, when I got back, the time and the trauma I experienced, you know, I experienced military sexual trauma, which is unwanted, unsolicited attention. I had two friends that were raped over there, experienced sexual assault, you know, went through all kinds of emotional, abuse and neglected as a woman, you know, just psychologically messed up. And I came back, and I really think what it is society doesn't know how to help us. We have to be able to communicate that. And I think books and movies and things like that open the doors up for dialogue. But I lived like that. I was, educated. But when I came back there, for one, there wasn't a system in place for reporting those type of offenses. Also, for women, there wasn't a strong sense of the services wasn't in place. And even a transition, it's often very difficult for various military personnel, depending on your experience. And I believe what happens is that we have this big gap in services, and veterans fall into cracks. So I didn't get the services I need. When I did come back to the VA to ask for services, they lost my record. You know,
wow.
I couldn't even prove anything. So I'm sitting here struggling, working, doing all that I was doing. As you see my background, I spent most of my time avoiding. So when I had all these symptoms and anxiety and fears and nightmares, you know, I had to compensate some type of way. And I think most of the people that experience trauma, they develop some type of skill, either it's addiction or, you know, some type of isolation or isolated. Everyone's trauma is different, but he's correct in that aspect of people know how to help, and the VA system has failed, you know, obviously over the years, and all these veterans are still, I mean, so many years later, so many wars later, it's still the same issue and no solution.
Yeah, I was going to say that. So how do we solve this? There needs to be more committees, more drilling down on this or what?
Well, for one, it's awareness, bringing the truth to the forefront. As we, now to state a few statistics there, 1 in 3 women are raped in the military. 38 men are sexually assaulted every day. You have the claim process. The claim process is red tape. So it's messy. It's very difficult to navigate through. It's all types of hurdles and red tape. So I think the issue is, for one, bringing awareness. People like me and other advocates that step up and aren't afraid to speak, you know, the truth so that people will know from a veteran's perspective. Because as long as we don't say anything, you're going to paint it into whatever they want it to be, and which is usually it's error and false, and it's the avoidance of accountability. They need to be held accountable for everything, for every promise. If you say you're going to do this, do it, and in a timely manner. There's so much that needs to be corrected, and even in legislation, you know, there's a lot of laws that need to be changed. We have one now. It's called the Military Justice Improvement Act with Senator Kristen Gillibrand out of New York, and she's leading that. And there's, you know, sexual offenders in the military can get out and they don't have to be reported to Central Registry. You know, so you got rapists out there that aren't even accounted for back in the society. So it's a lot of problems in the system, but it starts awareness and truth and then correcting these and then holding the VA and the military systems accountable.
And this is certainly one of the sad things. There are 22 veterans a day committing suicide. Wow. Yeah. That's got to make you feel awful.
Well, I was at that point. I was suicidal and depressed. You wouldn't know it. For one, the military teaches you, you don't show emotions. You don't show pain. You know, you keep it inside. It's not like, you know, if you break down, oh, you want to see a counselor? No, they call you, you know, a punk or you're weak. So you have to tough through a lot of stuff and a lot of damage occurs, you know, a lot of trauma and combat. You know, people are shaking to the core and it's going to take a time for them to recover, but. And most of the issues are just very simple, but it's not them listening to the issue and addressing them opposed to assuming they know, you know, and not addressing it to the point where there's a change. It needs to shift drastically.
One of the things you talk about is enlistment warnings. Really, do people know? Are they being told about the possibility of the experience of MST?
No. Recently, there was a lawsuit against the government. It was about 12 women, and they filed a lawsuit stating, you know, they experienced military sexual trauma, and they wanted to be compensated. And it was ruled that it was just considered an occupational hazard. So if it's an occupational hazard, shouldn't it be a warning at the time of enlistment that, you know, it's a possibility you may be raped? And even with men, men that join the military, it increases their chance by 10%. Experience military sexual trauma. So I thought you should be upfront with the recruit and the public, you know, the possibilities. We know, most of us, you know, when we vow, we basically write a blank check for the government up to our life. We're aware of that. But the other issues like rape and you know, abuse and all the other kind of, you know, psychological traumas, and I say invisible wounds, that's basically what PTSD is. You can't see it. And so, yeah, it's definitely a messy situation there.
Boy, no kidding. Tell us a little bit more. Obviously, you talk about this in your book, Battling the Storm Within. Was that cathartic for you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, what happened after I was working as a social worker for 15 years, I burned out. My doctor took me off on stress leave because I was taking care of everybody else and doing for other people and avoiding the pain. And then I ended up losing everything and entering the homeless veteran program. So that was a good thing for me because it allowed me to stand up on my feet. And that's when I started journaling. You know, I did like 3 years of therapy. The book comes from 3 years worth of work. And it was for me. You know, it was just for me to find closure, to find validation. No one believed me. Every time I tell them and every time I tried it, I always had these obstacles of trying to prove myself. So I felt like that was the time for me to speak whatever I wanted to speak with. Total freedom. And then I turned it around and used it as a tool to empower others and help others and show them how to overcome trauma and step back from life.
Yeah, thank goodness. What's your ultimate goal?
To be all I can be.
I love it.
Yeah, that's all. I just want to really just to inspire others to know that you can live again. You know, you don't, just because you experienced something, that you can bounce back. And it's people like me that have overcome and just kind of, I'm here, I'm a veterans advocate to share with people that no matter where you are in the nation, I'm connected to like 60 other veteran advocates and we get things done. So I'm available for that. If you want to hit me a note on my website, you know, I'm here to help any type of way besides my book. But
how rewarding is that for you?
I find joy in it because I feel like it's my purpose now. Instead of living in that dark place, you know, I had a Gulf War illness where we're exposed to toxins and poisons and shot up with the anthrax vaccine, the depleted uranium, all that good stuff was in our system. And that's where it stems from. So, you know, I'm really happy that I'm alive and able to function and then be able to do something to change, make a change that in an area that most people will not stand up in.
All right. As you said, people can pick up your book, Battling the Storm Within. They go to battlingthestormwithin.com as well, and they can find out what you're doing and where you're speaking and all that kind of good stuff. Sergeant, thanks so much for coming on and continued success.
I appreciate it. Thanks for the opportunity.
Thanks.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light Systems
system today, complete with two Black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com.